Minim. I'm going to speak in Maltese for now, and then we switch to English, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Mira. Khanilta awal laqa numru hamsa illum. Mira. Santa Messir, Televenda, the speaker, Santa Woman. Mela, illum għal taqob għala laqa numru 5, bħala kumitat permanenti dwar is-saħħa. Mela, qabel xi ħna nibdu nkonfermaw il-minuti għandna żewġ konferma tal-minuti bażikament għandna laqa numru 3 li sekret fl-24 ta' Wissu 2022. U għandna fejn kellna diskussjoni dwar il-protokolli tal-Awtorità tal-Protezzjoni tal-Embrijuni. Naħseb li minna ħadd għandna dak kollox approvat. U kellna laqa numru 4. Fejn kellna laqgħa ma' delegazzjoni mill-Kanada mexxija mill-speaker Kanadiż Sent Mirota.
Yes.
Alright ukoll? Tajjeb buni. Mela, minuti huma konfermati. Mela, illum ħanamlu laqgħa dwar is-sitwazzjoni ta' mart trasmess sesswalment u reproductive health ġewwa Malta. Speċjalment partikolarment fil-ġioklinik u anke ċertu sfidi li għandna. U għanna u koll il-Chief Medical Officer għanna ħajatina u koll input tijaw minna ħatijaw u għanna l-Valeska Padoveze li hija il-chairperson li tmexxi il-geoclinic ġewwa Malta. Nirringrazzjakom tal-li għajtu tal-batana li tiġu għanna tiltaqgħu magħna u minn hawnhekk nkun mill-ewwel ngħaddi lilek Dr. Valeska fil-każ jekk fil-każ neqilbu għal-lingwa Angliża minħabba biex ikollna kollox eżatt bħala aħjar il-ġargen ikun aħjar kif suppost. Grazzi lilek. Fidek, thank you.
Thanks. First of all, thanks for the invitation, for giving me the opportunity of being here to speak today. So, I will start. I will give you an update today about the sexual health challenges we have faced in the last year, especially in the post-COVID period. And I'm a consultant at the genitourinary clinic in Mater Dei Hospital. I'm also a representative of Malta for the EUSTI, the European Union Against Sexually Transmitted Infections. I'm in the council of the board, of the Europe EUSTI board. And I'm the external advisor of the Migrants Health Working Group for the International League of Dermatology Society. I hope I managed to work.
Yes, you
can. Or not? No? One moment is the easiest way, probably. Yes, I know.
Yes,
manualment it works, but from here. No, I keep on pressing, but. It is on because there is a red light.
Yes, yes,
yes. I can, or if you give me, I can also move.
It's good.
Okay. So this is my, yes, thank you. This is my outline. So I will give you an update about the national trends of sexually transmitted infections. We will talk about the subpopulation at higher risk for STIs and HIV, the intervention that we are carrying on to reduce the prevalence of sexually transmitted infection, the challenges we are facing, and future perspective, at least from our point of view, from the technical point of view. So next. So a bit of graphics. These graphics summarize the clinic attendance from 2000, so the year where the clinic was launched, was open, till 2021. So I analyzed the data until last year, 2021, December 31st. As you can see, the clinic now is located in Mater Dei Hospital at the second floor of the outpatient department. We are two consultants, one resident specialist and one GP with special interest. We have three nurses, one is retired and one is part-time, and so there is a fourth who is retired, basically. and to clerical staff. At the beginning there was only one consultant, so before I arrived there was only one consultant and there were two nurses. So the staff at the Geo Clinic increased. I put that red line, I can't point it because I arrived in 2015, so in the last year we expanded the service. And so you can see the increase of number of patients. There are two negative curve. The first in 2014 was before my arrival, when the previous consultant retired and left the service completely vacant, basically.
So the issue was because there was vacancy there.
Yes, that there was
a vacancy. The drop was because there was vacancy. Yes. And we can see another drop during the pandemic.
During the pandemic, yes. That is very clear. We had a 30% decrease of patients' attendance because the service, it was not shut down, but obviously we had a lot of issues related to testing. So mainly for molecular diagnostics, so for those STIs like chlamydia and gonorrhea that need some specific test, and these tests were all, the staff in the lab was busy with COVID, so we couldn't test for STIs, basically.
So the steep rise in 2015 is because the services increased?
I arrive, there were no doctors.
Expanded
so
the service, I probably, and it was
at
the beginning,
increased.
Yes. No. First, there was no doctor. There was a GP only. So then I arrive, we start working together. Then we had some trainees that we sent abroad. You know, our trainees before becoming specialists, they have to spend 3 years in UK because they study GU medicine. They don't stay here in Malta. And so there was this selection, this turnover of doctors sent abroad. They came back. One became then consultant and the second resident specialist. And then every year there was a post for HST, but we didn't find a suitable candidate. This year there is another open call, and probably there is already a person who is interested and who will apply. Okay, so there is a lot of will to expand the service. We also expand the space at the clinic. So from two rooms, we double the space. So now we are occupying all the second floor of the outpatient department, which is fully dedicated for the sexual health clinic. So I must say there was an expansion of the service.
In fact, from my side, I see this trend as positive. Why? Positive because we can see that the service is being offered, the service is there, and people know that there is a service, they can go there to get more information, to get treatment. So practically this is a good trend that we can see that upon the expansion of the Geo Clinic, we could see more people moving forward for the service.
Yes, because we create also more awareness. So
good.
Being there, and obviously when we consult patients, we also inform them about STIs, about the risk, and about the way of preventing STIs. And we work in collaboration with the Health Promotion Disease Prevention to try to inform, so in public campaign to try to reduce the, to increase the, basically the awareness and the prevention of STIs. I will say condom, but it's a bit out of fashion nowadays in Malta, so unfortunately.
You were mentioning about the nursing.
Yes.
So about the nursing stuff. So at the moment you have one which is retiring, one which is part-time.
We had some issues also because of nursing staff, because obviously we are a small service and we should always work with a chaperone or have nursing with us in the room. That it doesn't happen, so most of the time we see patients on our own because we don't have enough nursing staff or because they are quite busy in triaging, because there is a lot of work on the triage, answering on the phone, or seeing patients walk in the service, because many patients arrive with symptoms, they don't pass through the general pathway of referral from GP, but they come and they walk in the service. Now, recently, I must say that there was another extra nurse provided to our service. One is part-time, so she works 3 days per week, and one is retired, and she works only 1 day per week. So over, let's say, four. One works 1 day a week. The second one works 3 days per week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and the other two works full-time, basically.
Just one thing. No, seeing that there are 46 slides, let's do the presentation and then possibly do the questions later.
As
I
you
think
want.
Better, so that basically it will
please
be.
So.
Okay, so now it should work.
Because otherwise we'll.
Too fast. I like that. Okay. Okay. So this graphic showed the attendance by gender. So we have mainly male, as you can see from the slide, 4,400. This is the data of the 2021. We can say 65% of our patients are male, and around 30%, 35% are female. We still, compared to other GU clinic, we have a big percentage of female attending the service. So we are not only an LGBT sexual health clinic like in other countries, I must say. And 30 were the transgender male and female. This shows the patient distribution by sexual orientation. As I stressed before, we don't see only MSM. MSM stands for men who have sex with men. But we have quite interesting number of heterosexual male and female. You see 2,232 were heterosexual male in 2021, and more or less the same 1,854 and 1,896, the first were heterofemale and men who have sex with men. Then we have some bisexual men, 333, and some bisexual female, and the other group. I went back. So patient distribution by age, as expected, there is a peak. I hope I have a pointer. There is a peak in the age bracket between 25, 26, and 30. So our patients are all young adults. And the patient distribution by country of origin show that we had quite a big number of foreigners coming to our service. I'm sure also the other services at Mater Dei Hospital have a huge number of we call them migrant or international migrants, but in our clinic we count around 60% of Maltese patients and the other 35 are divided into 25% from Europe. So in gray, basically, Europe includes also the European Economic Area, so I included also the Eastern Europe, Russia, and the Balkan countries. And the 15% are the third country nationals, so extra-European migrants. This is represent the first challenge for our service because dealing with international migrants is always quite difficult in terms of difference, cultural differences, ethnic, linguistic barriers. So we don't have cultural mediators or interpreters, and we are talking about very sensitive issues seen in a different way also from other culture. And this takes time also. It's time-consuming, energy-consuming. It's not always easy to deal with this kind of patients. So the trend, this is, I think, one of the topic slide, important slide, because it shows you the trends of the four notifiable sexually transmitted diseases. So those that we are obliged to notify to the public health authorities. So chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, and I add also mycoplasma genitalium. So you can see the trend from the year 2005 to 2021, last year. And there is an increase of cases and a decrease in correspondence of the COVID outbreak. So if you overlap the curve of the attendance to the service, you can see the deflection, the negative number is related also to the fact that we had less patients attending the service and so less patients tested for STIs. When you go to compare the number, by the way, you see that there is a negative number, but the number of STIs is still high compared to the number of patients attending. So also during COVID, there was already a slight increase of STIs in the population. Okay. So if you see the next slide, when we talk about increase, we are talking about a significant increase. If you look at the data of gonorrhea, we had in 2020, gonorrhea is a sexually transmitted infection, which is an indicator of the sexual activity of the population because it's an acute STI. So gonorrhea is a very short incubation period, 5 or 7 days. So when we see an increase of gonorrhea, it means it's an index of activity, sexual activity of the population. And we have increase of 4 times in the number of gonorrhea from 2020 to 2021. Not only because we increase increase the number of patients attending the service because there was a pickup of the patient after COVID, but also because there is a real increase of STIs in the population, so circulating syphilis as well, almost double the cases.
All this increase, isn't it? Lack of education? What are we aiming for? Because practically here we're seeing in 1 year a drastic increase.
Yes.
So is it because more people visited and so they were aware of sexually transmitted disease? Or else was it before because they lack all the information and then they found
it? Look, there are different reasons. We call it sexplosion. So first, after COVID, probably everyone tried to catch up, let's say. No, they were more active because they come from a lockdown from a difficult period. So also there is this kind of behavior, let's say. So a lot of parties, a lot of...
Have you got data maybe in other countries? And we can
compare? Yes, the same, exactly.
It's the same.
Yes. Everyone has in Europe
country.
Has an outbreak of STIs, yes.
Walter?
We don't Let's have...
If you go back to the previous slide.
Yes.
The one before, no,
oh,
previous.
Sorry, I'm going on.
Previous.
Okay.
You will see that the black line.
The black line is the attendance.
Is the attendance. So the attendance is related as well. There is a relationship to that attendance because 2020 is when the numbers were very well down.
Mm-hmm.
Really, 2019 compared to 2021 might be a more valid comparison.
Yes,
because the number of cases attended to clinic could be different number of tests.
And 2022 that I didn't analyze,
yes.
But we are facing
yes,
increase.
Yes. I agree. But
for 2022, you are seeing an even trend still going on.
2019 and 2021 might be because the number of tests would be the same.
Yes.
Practically. In 2020, the number of tests would
but
be the same.
But the curve, if you go back to this, the curve is increasing
yes.
more
yes.
than 2019.
Yes.
And the number of patients attending is more or less the same. We have really seen a number of acute infections of patients walking in the service because they had a symptom of an STI. Okay, it's not because we are working more, because we have seen the same number of patients. We cannot work more also because this patient with symptom and with STIs takes more time. So they are not asymptomatic that we just screen, but we need to treat, we need to deal the problem, we need to follow up, so it takes longer.
Okay.
But the thing is, that's why we need some data, maybe possibly related to other countries, which relates
okay.
to obviously within the...
I mean, there is an outbreak of syphilis and gonorrhea and chlamydia all over Europe.
All over Europe.
So this is not something only of Malta. In Malta, unfortunately, being a small country, the prevalence shut up. So when you go to the statistic of ECDC, for instance, Malta comes out as the first country in Europe for syphilis prevalence because it's per population size, obviously, no? As being a small country. Sorry? You, before, yes, it was 11 point something, the prevalence of syphilis, so the first country in Europe, because it's a small country. The other country, you compare the number, is a statistical, no? You compare the number of STIs per population size, millions of inhabitants. This is a small country, so it's easier to be the first
exactly.
in this negative trend, unfortunately.
As well, the more you test, the more you find. So
mm-hmm.
in some effect...
Exactly.
It is not a reflection only of the situation. More about the reflection of the
yes.
number of tests. So,
it's probably the most realistic statistic all over the other countries.
Because we are a small
yes,
country,
yes,
the access
yes.
to access to tests is
of course
is probably a real result.
Yes.
Whereas in some countries where you would be 100 miles away from your test.
Yes. So practically, this might also be that we're going to have more cases now being tested as positive because we're going to extend services now. To also extend more the testing of GU.
The more you test, the more you find.
But the finding is good because if you do not find it, then you cannot prevent the complications of this disease.
To discuss about this, there is a decrease of mycoplasma, but there is not a real decrease of mycoplasma genitalium. Guideline has changed, so we don't test for mycoplasma, people are symptomatic. So we have stopped testing asymptomatic patients because of a problem of antimicrobial resistance. So we don't treat a patient if it is asymptomatic, if we found mycoplasma, so we stop testing. This is one of the issues we face nowadays with STIs.
For the non-medics, there is the intention to treat. So there is no point in testing for a disease if you do not intend
to treat
it. Because you want to... So,
Okay. Yes, it's difficult to understand, but Mycoplasma is becoming resistant to a lot of antibiotics. And in Malta, we have already cases resistant to all the antibiotics available. So that's why we decided to stop testing people without symptoms, just to avoid to overtreat and create more resistance.
Because the more you treat, you're going to end up with
this. And that's why we should avoid empiric treatment also at community level, but it is a more complex discussion. So this is more or less the
problem. Can I ask you another question, please? You've got the estimate considering an adult population of 367,000.
Yes, this is my... I'm not a statistician, and I'm not... I look at the adult population, so
I think if you look, though, at the adult population, which incorporates the foreigners as well, I think that is much higher. So the incidence would make a difference.
I didn't incorporate it. Probably, yes. Okay. So, and concerning HIV, I mean, we diagnose HIV. My doctor, the gene medicine specialist doctor, also treat HIV because they attend the HIV clinic. These are numbers from 2021 and 2020, and the number of patients in care. We see a discrepancy. I mean, the number of newly diagnosed patients with HIV is more or less the same, is stable, although I have the impression already that this year is higher. And so there is also an increase of HIV infection this year in Malta. The number of patients in care has increased because during COVID many patients got stuck in the country, and so those who couldn't have access to treatment because they couldn't travel back to the country from where usually they get the treatment, they were taken in charge in Malta. So that is the reason. So how are we doing with the fast-track targets? I don't know if you are aware of this 1990 and now 95. The meaning of this is a UN target that basically is a target for the elimination of the HIV transmission. So if we reach the 95% of patients living with HIV diagnosed with infection, we put on treatment the 95% of these, and 95% of those on treatment became undetectable, we have achieved the elimination of HIV, and the target is by the 2030. We are a bit behind, I must say, especially with the first 90 or 95. We have to increase testing, basically. We have to increase testing because there are out there a lot of people, we can say still the 15% or 20% living with HIV and not diagnosed.
They're not aware.
So the first target, I think, we're still around 75%, no?
Whereas
we are doing quite well on the second and the third target.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, in Malta, obviously, the sexual transmission, I mean, HIV is seen mainly via sexual transmission when we have sex with men. So that is the population more at risk. So we have to focus mainly on this kind of, on this risk group. We have discussed a lot about new options for testing. Now we have rapid test, point of care test, or rapid diagnostic test, not only for HIV but also for other STIs. A lot of new tests in the pipeline. And we have to introduce new modality of testing, self-testing, online testing, and community testing. So we have to go out in the community and start working also with the community, mainly with the LGBT community, to increase testing uptake at community level.
The spreading of community testing is going particularly to help because people are going to be much more close to the service and they might be much more aware of it because sometimes they don't tend to come to a clinic. It is much more easier for them to join the service in the community.
Yes, this is, you are aware, I'm sure, of the community testing in Valletta Victoria with Checkpoint Malta and with the other NGOs. So we are trying to support them and to then link to care patients eventually diagnosed with HIV. So there is a fast track because if someone is diagnosed during the community clinic, they are immediately referred, or the morning after, they are referred to our
service. Unfortunately, I see it even in people my age, like I'm from the younger generation, they are still a bit cautious about coming to the GU clinic because they might be seen or something. So this in the community, I think it will help maybe to put at ease more their mind. So I think that's a very good sign which the government is doing at this point.
What's the methods adapted for online testing?
Online testing is a
is it devices
I really
or?
Is good. In UK they use quite a lot of online testing. There are kits that are sent, testing kits, tests mm-hmm. sent to the patients. According, you can select age risk group or mm-hmm. when you want to do a screening for chlamydia or you want to reach some population between the age, our peak population, 25-35, you can send them home kits mm-hmm. and they fill an online form or a form. So they test themselves. It's a self-sampling. So mm-hmm. they take the swab, if they are MSM, a throat swab, a rectal swab, and a sample of urine. They take themselves the blood, and they post it, and they send it to the laboratory.
So it's
A self-testing, self-sampling, everything with a code mm-hmm. number. And
this was happened in COVID as well, in COVID,
yes.
with COVID testing. Many places in the UK, for example, would have a system where you would register mm-hmm. for a COVID test. Yes. They would send you the kit, even to travel. So they would send you the kit, you send it back, they give you a right to travel because you have a negative test. And this would be...
They have a long tradition
yes.
of this. They have also the...
So it's not actually... Sorry.
It's not a
online
test. No. You
it's a preparation
you
for it
online.
The administration.
But it would be confidential. The confidentiality
is
what is.
No, but there is also a system. Yes, that you apply online.
You apply.
So
you apply online.
But
you cannot do the test
not
online.
The testing.
No. But they are all online testing.
But here we have new options for HIV testing. That's why I asked for it.
Yes, home testing. So you apply online and you receive the kit and you send it back.
Dr. Valesco.
Yes.
Dr. Stephen Spiterio, CGB.
Ah, yes. Last time, years ago. Many things have changed now. It works quite well because it's anonymous, confidential, and obviously and reliable because
the
you
use advantage is the confidentiality.
Confidentiality.
The main issue is of confidentiality. It's always confidential, so practically none of the data is going to come out. But the issue is they're not coming physically to the clinic, so for them it's even much more like safer that they're not going to be noticed.
Although I must say that we started also, okay, they still come to the clinic, but we can also find a new way to use, we do phone consultation also, so in asymptomatic low risk, to speed up the process. But patients still need to come to take blood at the GU clinic, so it's a bit different. This asymptomatic patient can easily do a self-sampling. This is what we do, even when they come to our clinic. So we don't need to examine the genital of everyone if they don't have symptoms. So patients swab themselves, they give us the kit, the swab,
okay.
We send it to the lab, and the nurse or phlebotomist take the blood. So there is no real need to come physically to us. If we want, we can also find other way.
You adapt.
So
the service
yes.
is going to be offered much better to the patient. That's
yes,
all.
Yes. We are always flexible and we change, we
yes.
adapt to the reality.
Yes. Perfect. Thank you.
So these are other point-of-care tests. We were part of a project, an international WHO project. This was the protocol published by the WHO. And are other kind of rapid test, point-of-care tests for chlamydia and gonorrhea. And we took part to these two protocols. One is the clinical-based evaluation of point-of-care tests for chlamydia and gonorrhea in men who have sex with men, so throat, rectum, and urine. And the other was a dual point-of-care test for HIV and syphilis. So we validated this test. And our staff was trained by the WHO, so it was... basically, we compared the result of the point-of-care test with the standard test sent to the lab, and there was a very high positive predictive value, so a positive... basically, we can use those rapid tests to test patients instead of the standard test. They have the same value. This can help, for instance, in the plan of decentralizing the sexual health service to primary health care level and to increase also testing capacity. Obviously, they're rapid, reliable. They decrease the waiting time of patients, so they decrease also the spreading of infection until a patient waits, because although you tell to the patient don't be sexually active, most of the time patients still have sex, so they can spread infections. And they help also reducing antimicrobial resistance, because we don't need to treat empirically our patients, so based on symptoms, but based on the etiology, so on the result of the test. And they save costs also related to untreated STIs and to complication, obviously. So this is what I personally envisage for the future in Malta. Other way to tackle STIs epidemic and HIV epidemic is that of upscaling health services and decentralized sexual health intervention to the community, as I say, so community intervention with the GP. These are photos from a training that we had carrying on in 2020, still during the pandemic, to GPs who expressed interest in sexual health. So we developed a specific package for these GPs, so two intensive training courses, STIF course from UK, so certified from UK, we were the trainers. 1 month spent at the GU clinic, so practical, so with us, and they are fully certified to see patients at primary health care level, basically.
So GPs with
special interest in GU medicine. Yes. There are six at the moment.
Six?
Six, yes.
Trained.
Fully trained? Yes. Waiting, ready to work, waiting for their moment.
Do you have
yes.
Do you have a form of control on the private testing that is done outside the NHS? For example, getting a kit in from the pharmacy and doing a saliva test for HIV or that. You don't have.
Yes, I
but
know.
But we should educate people about that.
Yes,
thing.
We inform them. They are aware that there are rapid tests. The problem is that the test must be also reliable. We talk about HIV, there are reliable tests. For other STIs, it's very difficult.
No, I'm talking about tests which are you can get over the counter at pharmacies.
Anyway.
As you can get today for corona for COVID. So we should make it a point that we have an updated control of the situation out there, because you can, of course, through the pharmacies, for example, if a kit is sold, we take the bar, the code, whatever, and we must get over the result, whatever it is. Otherwise, we're going to lose the contact. GDPR. This is a sexually transmitted disease which is regulated by...
You're right, but the GDPR issue then comes in play.
Concerning HIV, I can tell you we have patients who come with a rapid
test positive up till a few years ago, we used to provide a code for
there
HIV.
There are our contact details in the rapid test.
Up till a few years ago, we used to provide a code for HIV. Nowadays, it's different.
No, they are all coded, our test. Everything
is coded. They are all coded.
No, it's not.
Months before, when we used to book HIV testing, as far as I remember, we used to give a code to the patient.
Yes,
it's on the bottom.
It's still coded.
Anonymous, yes. Anonymous.
Still anonymous.
But you can book online, no?
HIV our tests are all anonymous, I didn't say, but...
No, for example, but a person who can go to the polyclinic for the clinic and have the HIV testing,
yes, the
he can do the HIV testing under his name.
Yes, but the result will not be out if it's positive. If you are HIV positive...
That's a different story. Yes. If the result is positive, it won't be published.
No.
But he can still apply for it on his name, not with the code that we used to do before.
Yes, correct. Yes. Whereas our patients, the Juclin, they are all coded.
All your patients are coded.
Yes.
But that's the point that we're saying here.
We have to regulate what is being done out there. I have patients of mine who did a private test on their own, over the counter, came positive, and didn't bother to inform the health authorities or whoever regarding contact tracing or whatever it is. So
we're talking about an HIV test.
Yes.
But that is the problem also for the person.
Yes.
Of course.
Because if he doesn't get treatment, so why...
But that's why we are here in this committee, to see...
But why you get treatment?
They're afraid of the repercussions.
I understand. It's social, it's not
education. Yes. Education, that's an issue of education, that they have to be aware that there is treatment, and once you've got HIV, if it's positive, you can, thanks to all the medication, lead a normal life. So practically, I think this is going to embark. who's going to embark. If we're going to see and we're going to have in the pharmacy, as we already have, these kits, their self kits, we have to educate immediately. Not exactly that you're going to take all the details, because most probably they're going to revert backwards and they're going to stop there. But they have to be aware that there is treatment, and then they can go to the GU clinic and make use of the service. Because I think this is all an education plan. It's not just you're positive. They have to be aware that even though you have got HIV, you can prevent from getting AIDS thanks to the medication. And the sooner you're going to know that you are aware that you've got HIV, the better it's going to be for you to lead a normal life. I think from there we have to start. It's all about education.
But in this case, we have to see about the legality of this test being so freely available. Because the very simple fact that this person knows that he is HIV positive would make him liable, even by law, for him to basically be transmitting it to another person. That is criminal liable, as far as I'm concerned. So we have to be very careful with that. That's the problem. That's the issue here. Am I right, Steve, or not? But should it be so freely available, the testing?
That's the problem.
I would think that testing and making testing freely available is very important. Now, whether the patient or the positive patient reports it or not, it is ideal that the patient will report it. But forcing people to report it, whether they like it or not, will be counterproductive, because it will stop people from having their tests. What you have said is perfectly right. The only way forward is by education. If we teach people that if you have a positive test and you don't come forward, you are likely for your disease to progress into something worse. Whereas if you come forward, we are able to treat it. Treatment is free, we are able to treat it, and you will not transmit it to other people. What you have said, that people are liable, it is true that people who are positive and know they are positive and infect someone else, then they are liable.
They are liable.
But if they tell no one that they are positive, then how can you make them liable for something
in this case,
that
I
no
think
one
we
else
need,
apart from them knows?
We need another player in this room then, because it's with the disease surveillance unit, which falls under the public health sector. Sorry for that. But ultimately you need
the people to come forward. So any restriction will stop them from coming forward. We need to educate the ones who are positive to come forward. And that is where we need to really put forward. Because as soon as you try to say you have to come for yourself, not you have to come for the community, for yourself, because it will make you better.
But do we have statistics about the tests being carried out and in stock over the shelf? And compared to the test being made at the GU clinic?
We have an idea how many tests are being dispensed or being sold every year. How many HIV home kits are being done in Malta?
For example,
we can say that 20% are positive. We can grab an idea that if 1,000 tests have been sold, so we can have a good idea that if by default 10% of those are positive, so we know that at least there are 100 people who are probably positive, and those 100 people, by extrapolation, those 100 people are positive and they are out there.
You can order the tests online from a foreign country without any restriction at all. So really and truly, whatever numbers we have would only be specific to the numbers that we think are here, but you can order an HIV test online. It will be delivered from Italy or from England. It will be delivered to your home with Amazon or with
usually any. People who because they want to know their HIV status and they want to seek help, care, not because they test and they want to remain with a positive test. So I find it very difficult.
There would be some who will be like this, who are afraid to come forward, and I am sure that Dr. Stephen is right. There would be some people who would be, in spite of knowing they are positive, would not come forward. But the great majority would come forward, but there will still be some, and those are the most dangerous, because they are the ones who remain infected.
Especially if they don't have any complications or any...
Yes. So they do not develop it.
Not
everybody develops
okay.
AIDS straight away. They would be asymptomatic, but potentially infected.
So there is a period they need to accept their diagnosis, and then it happened to us, and they came after a while with a rapid test positive, but we understood that they knew already. So there are many reasons why they don't go immediately to the doctor, but most of the time, if you decide to do a test, is to know your HIV status and to seek for help, then, or at least some extra information, so that is important.
As a side note, Dr. Valeska, as a side note, incidentally, while we're speaking at this, in your case, when you inform the patient that they've got HIV, for example, and it is quite a significant disease, so obviously that you break to the patients, is there any form of, maybe psychological help or something that you can refer to?
Yes, we have the psychological support. We start working with a psychologist, with the psychologist department in Mater Dei. We have a psychologist also comes. Yes, we work together. Mm-hmm. He personally, physically, come every fortnight at the GU clinic. So every Thursday we have a psychologist with us, and he see our patients, those who refer. And if there is a new diagnosis and we understand that the person needs immediately some psychological support, we call him and he comes immediately. So we are organized for that. Yes.
But practically all this discussion is going to turn on informing much more the patient that if he's positive, he needs to get help so that his progression is going to stop. Because all of this, if he's going to be aware, because most people up till now think that if they are HIV positive, yes, okay, they're going to get AIDS. But this was 30 years ago, 20 years ago. Now with the evolution that we've got in the medical sector, we have got medications that the progression is going to stop. So the most important fact that we're going to press also on this committee today is that we need to inform much more the patient, even if the self-kit is being purchased from a pharmacy, that the pharmacist needs to make aware the patient that if he's going to turn out positive, it's very important that he's going to go and get all the medication that he requires, all the treatment that he needs, so that this is going to help him from progress into AIDS. And this responsibility is going to help him much more, and there is much more the possibility that we're going to reduce the amount of patients that are going to stay quiet even though they know that they are positive.
But we add a leaflet inside each kit of rapid tests for HIV with our detail, contact details, saying in case of positive test, contact immediately GU clinic.
But verbally,
it's
going to
pharmacies.
Help much more, and there need to be a program of information, not only billboards, they may have to be made aware, and especially in schools, because there we've got the young, they're going to turn out into young adults, and it's very important that from them we're going to start having this education.
Yes, just with health promotion, this is prevention directorate, and organize a campaign for information.
That's the optimal medium, I think.
Yes.
But
decentralizing the testing and doing community testing with staff trainer.
It is the education of the public before they become patients.
The idea of making our testing the most viable and the most convenient and the most practical, so that we push all the patients toward one type of testing, which is our testing, rather than applying online or purchasing online, so on and so forth. So.
And this also leads to the importance of having contraception, because that's the main barrier that's going to prevent from having sexually transmitted disease. So all this data that we have might be drastically reduced if people are made much more aware of the importance of having contraception, of having this barrier, so that we're going to prevent from having sexually transmitted diseases.
I laugh because
it's going on for
I have
years.
This discussion every day, every 5 minutes with my patient, but I think we have to change disc. We have to change. No one, they laughed in your face. No one will use condom anymore. I know it's very important, but
it is crucial. And
a little number of people are willing to use condom, so that is the problem. Yes. So. So where we were. So how we tackle the problem, outreach program and this community testing, I mean, you should support this group, the community testing with rapid diagnostic test. And what we should do also is target this hard-to-reach population. What we know is that prevalence of STIs is much higher in this risk group, so mainly not only MSM and LGBT, but also sex workers. We don't have a lot of data about sex workers and STIs in sex workers. The few studies we have conducted show a very high prevalence of STIs, mainly bacterial STIs, chlamydia gonorrhea, and in sex workers who use drugs, also hepatitis, hepatitis C. Other risk group are migrants, third country nationals, so I will show you in the next slide the study and the prevalence of STIs in this group. Other way to prevent and to tackle the STIs HIV pandemic is epidemic and not pandemic is the biomedical intervention, so the use of PrEP and post-exposure prophylaxis, and the fast track, so put on treatment, the treatment as prevention, put off treatment immediately those diagnosed with HIV to reach the viral load, the undetectable viral load, and reduce transmission. So when I talk about reaching how the hard-to-reach population, we have work. I personally am involved in some projects. I got some European funds. There are two projects now. SCAP, which is a project funded by the European Academy of Dermatology and Venereology on a skin and sexually transmitted infection CAP questionnaire, knowledge, attitude and practice survey, to inform an app, so with health promotion information strategies, to inform an app addressed to migrants, so a multilingual app to inform migrants about prevention of STIs and access to tests. Reach Out is a project funded by the European Commission. It will kick off in January 2023. It's a 2 years project in partnership with Italy and Greece for the establishment of a mobile clinic, a mobile unit to reach out in the community those who are difficult to reach, mainly people the most vulnerable, mainly sex workers, migrants, or people who inject drugs, or those in the low social economic class who need to be rich because they will not come to our service. Okay, so we got a good budget to work on this project. So we are going to work in collaboration with the Health Promotion Disease Prevention Directorate for the health promotion messages. And the GU clinic is mainly involved in this project so with a mobile clinic, mobile unit. So which are the main barrier when we go to target this population, mainly migrant population, with our sexual health intervention, so linguistic and cultural barriers, so the need of interpreter and cultural mediator, lack of education, knowledge, and prevention about prevention of STIs, difficult to make them understood about the consent, to give consent to testing, especially blood tests, HIV, so the importance of using also rapid tests, because especially migrants, they have problem to give blood for a cultural reason. They are a mobile population, so very difficult to reach. They move, and their main target is work, economic income, not testing, no prevention. We have to allocate resources, and most of the time integrate testing with health promotion strategies and education addressed to this population. Because they are here for an income, especially economic migrants. So if they have an health issue, or if I had the migrants, for instance, and then we diagnosed with HIV, he had a skin rash, and he was referred not because of the skin rash, but he developed a uveitis related to a secondary syphilis. So only because he was not seeing, he went to a doctor, not because he had a skin rash of secondary syphilis. Then he was referred to our service, and we diagnosed secondary syphilis, HIV, and hepatitis B. So they have multiple morbidity. The diagnosis is usually late, and when there are already complications. Because migrants, their main... In that case, the access to treatment is also a problem if they are not local. I mean, they didn't apply for asylum in Malta, but they come from other countries. This was it was entitled. It was entitled. Yes. Yes. That was entitled. Because, I mean, they have casual works most of the time. No, they can apply for asylum and have an asylum status or are entitled to health access, but they don't have... they don't have an income,
because some of them
which have a temporary job.
So they are in Marsa and they call them in the morning to work, they go to work, they don't go to the hospital. I mean, it's very, no,
so
you choose for the income.
Anything.
That's what I mean. So the income is the main.
Is there, I'm not sure about this, if there is any program that when immigrants or foreign people who are coming to Malta to work, if they are tested before getting their permit, work permit, I know they do a lot of testing privately, but. Not sure if it's
there is a series of tests which need to be done. So the tests that we test would be mandated by the superintendent of public health. But usually they would be checking for tuberculosis, they would be checking for hepatitis, but not usually for sexually transmitted diseases. Which would be discriminatory to some extent if you are going to test a part of the population for sexually transmitted diseases, this would not be fair to some extent. Discriminatory. Yes. But we test for tuberculosis, we test X-ray, we test for hepatitis, and
so
from. Because they are coming from an area which is high prevalence. So there is a prevalence of hepatitis,
and it's high
which
prevalence
is much
of
higher
HIV,
than in Malta.
HIV?
Not in most countries where these people come from. In some countries there would be a higher prevalence. Yes, I would agree. But if you lump everybody with the same, this is only some countries have very high prevalence of the migrants, and most of the migrant workers where they are coming from, so from Asia, they do not have a much higher rate of STDI than we do, and most of our legal migrants who would be having tests are coming from these areas. And from these areas, yes. So India, Pakistan, the Philippines, they do not have much higher rates.
And other things, there are a lot of migrants today. So one, they enter in Italy, they live there, and they move here to work. So I saw a migrant today, HIV positive, on treatment. He's taking his treatment for Italy. He was here. He works here and he lives here, really, but his documents are in Italy. I mean, migrants move. Permesso di soggiorno. Migrants move where they work,
they
where they find a job.
They are legally.
They're illegal. I know.
And you don't have information about
them. But
they
still here, and they still need care, because if they develop an STI, it's also our problem. We see the interlink between, let's say, that's why this project reach out, migrant sex workers. We have a lot of problem to trace sex workers when they are positive for gonorrhea, for instance, and we see a lot of migrants infected with gonorrhea around Mars, that area. So for us, it's very important reaching out this group, independently from legal status or illegal.
Yes. Because want to protect our people.
And then
also
other Maltese people who go with the same sex worker and have the same problem. So.
Yes.
We need to protect people, yes, not create more barriers. Okay. So this is a study that we conducted here about the prevalence of STIs in migrants, and we see that international migrants and refugees have a 1.7 times higher risk of being diagnosed with STIs where compared to other EU nationals. And if we do an MSM, men who have sex with men, migrants, are four times more likely to be diagnosed with an STI compared to heterosexual. This is the reason why we need to target this population. Other population we need to target with our intervention are the population custodial facilities. So we carry on these studies, 2017-2019, a small sample size, only 206 inmates. We did some interview during the consultation. We saw also quite a lot of migrants, so 28 different nationalities. And we found a high prevalence of hepatitis, mainly hepatitis C, because there was an interlink with drug use, obviously. But at least we started systematically testing also for other infection, including syphilis, that was not previously done. And we started a collaboration also with the prison in Malta. So now syphilis is the test for syphilis, HIV and hepatitis is offered at entry. And those tested positive are referred to our clinic for treatment. Currently, the sexual health nurse has done other information sessions. So during this period we have done some information session concerning STIs to the population in prison, and followed by testing. We offer tests. So this study show a high prevalence, especially in the female inmates, who are mainly sex workers. So again, the importance of targeting this group also when they are in custodial setting, so when they are easier to reach, let's say. Okay. So these are this is the prevalence of STIs we have seen in these in the inmates during the study period. So AIDS for genital warts, as we say, hepatitis C, few patients had HIV or they were already diagnosed with HIV, and other conditions, STIs and skin conditions. So this is a list of recommendations for testing custodial setting to provide consistent and widely available substance misuse and mental health interventions, provide also effective intervention including condom, possibly lubricant education and risk communication, offer opt-out testing for STIs and bloodborne viruses, link inmates to care, and offer hepatitis B vaccine immunization. So going to the biomedical intervention, PrEP, this is very new because this is the thesis, the master dissertation of a doctor from public health who collaborated with me at the Jew Clinic and in this research to investigate the knowledge, attitude and behavior and acceptability of HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis among high-risk MSM in the Maltese island. So the methodology is a mixed method, so a quantitative cross-sectional study with two sources, so an interview, data collected via survey using an online questionnaire and the data of the genitourinary clinic. The population role was obviously MSM over the age of 18, all HIV negative or with an HIV status unknown. We excluded obviously the HIV positive because PrEP is the pre-exposure prophylaxis, I think you are aware of, is called biomedical intervention, is highly effective in preventing HIV if taken daily or on-demand, event-based, so before having sex. So these are the results. There was quite a big awareness, so people were aware of PrEP. They knew what PrEP is, 92%, almost 93%, and mainly those with a higher education status. But there was not as such a high knowledge. So when we went to ask if they knew how to take PrEP, they were not really knowledgeable about that, so 48%. They found out that PrEP was meeting their HIV prevention need in 53% the cases. 73% were interested in PrEP, maybe to start PrEP. Those who were not interested in PrEP were afraid of getting another STIs, or worried about side effect, or they needed to change. They didn't need a way to change the way they protect themselves. Maybe they were using condom. And one of the issues we also investigated was the cost of PrEP. PrEP is available in all the local pharmacies, and the cost is around 57 euro. So some MSM find it not affordable. And according to this study, they were willing to pay on average 30 euro, let's say 29.44 euro for 30 tablets, which is a package of PrEP, and 68% thought that it should be free of charge because it's highly effective in preventing HIV. PrEP users spent on average 36 euro every month on it. Many PrEP users purchase PrEP online also. Okay. PrEP is highly effective.
That
and
PrEP is basically the PrEP charge, the PrEP cost should be decreased?
Decreased, yes.
And do you think that basically...
Or we should have a PrEP trial to understand more about our population on PrEP or the people who really need PrEP, like other countries in Europe. So we are not collecting proper data on PrEP. There is a lot of awareness, but a poor knowledge about PrEP. Some people... the interest, according to this study, is moderate, is not very high, so I don't expect really a huge number of patients who ask for it, okay? But it can be useful in, yes?
Okay. There is always an element of availability, so all the
I would be surprised that not 100% wanted this to be for free. It is only
68%. Exactly, that's why I'm
not sure what the 32% who did not want it for free were really...
In fact, I'm asking that, in fact.
But, so if you go to the previous slide, for example. So this 68% thought that it should be free of charge. I would think that 100% would want it free for charge.
It's so quite strange.
So I question those 32% who would not, why they want to pay for it. The problem with all PrEP is the cost, because we are saying that the cost of daily PrEP in Malta is 57 euros. And this is, so is someone who, how many of these will not afford 2 euros a day?
A day.
And the question is, there would be a significant number who would increase, that the use of PrEP would not remain with MSM, and potentially would increase to other groups as well. So the availability is, the numbers related to availability will change. The other question is, what would availability of PrEP, it would reduce HIV, but it would also potentially increase the risk of other STIs, which would also carry a risk. There is that possibility as well.
I'm a bit, usually, yes, but we are seeing already so many STIs in people who still don't use condom, because the people who start on PrEP are those who don't use condom. So the risk is HIV.
Yes.
So at least we prevent HIV. So the cost effectiveness is very high. I mean, it's effective. So not everyone wants to. It's true. I discuss every day, every single patient MSM, I offer PrEP. Every single patient, if they are concerned about the way they live their sexuality. So if they don't feel free to live, because this can, HIV, the fear of HIV can cause a lot of mental issues. So I always inform, we all at the Jew Clinic inform patients about the PrEP. But some of them say, no, I don't need another STI, so if I take PrEP, I will be more relaxed and I will not use condom even more, and so I will get other STIs. So I think the population here is not the same of other countries where everyone will go on PrEP, everyone will stop using condom. I think this is quite, it's the first study we carry on, and this, I was quite surprised, but in a positive way. So it means they are not all wanted to go on PrEP because maybe it's free. And I think maybe decreasing the price is the first step, maybe not free PrEP or free trial. Free trial will help us to understand better the situation, but at least decreasing the price to an affordable PrEP. Now everyone buys online a PrEP. It costs 20 euro per month or $20 a month if you buy online. But then it's not regulated again, no? They are importing PrEP. I know of people who take PrEP 30 minutes before having sex in a sex group party. So, and this is very dangerous because they might still acquire HIV, and even this virus can become resistant to the PrEP. So I think at least dealing a better price is what we should do. So go to $20 or $30 a month. People will not order online if it costs $20, and they will take it here. Those in need, at least.
The advantage of reducing the price would be that that what they are getting, we would know that what they are getting is the right thing, because online some of them would be getting the right drug, and a fair number of them would be getting a fake. And
although, I mean, those who, at least who come to the Jew Clinic, they know where to buy, because the UK regulation, I mean, there is a good website, they know where to buy and how to get it. Although now there are a lot of issues to get PrEP from UK after Brexit, so I think it's better to regulate the market, get a better price here,
and offer it here.
And offer it here, yes. This is definitely my opinion. Okay, so... So we see the awareness was high, the interest moderate, similar to the Netherlands. PrEP use lowers anxiety, so I see many people taking PrEP and using condom because they are very afraid, basically. They obtain PrEP through informal channel, and they don't even come to the Jew Clinic. So the advantage of PrEP is also in all over Europe and the world is that people increase testing. So if we want to work on the first 95 target, PrEP is also a way to increase testing, HIV testing, because many people approach us just because they want to start PrEP. okay, or they want to know more about PrEP, and so this is a way to offer testing more. This will also increase, obviously, the work of our clinic because patients on PrEP need to come every 3 months. So that is another big challenge for us, yes. According to guideline, every 3 months we need to give all the blood tests, at least an HIV test every 3 months, and then we offer every 6 months the full STI screening. Okay. And the compliance, many people don't know exactly how to take it. That is another problem if they are not guided by an healthcare professional. The recommendation of this study is that to improve data collection on PrEP use, the data we collect on PrEP are still scanty, and especially the informal use. We don't have data on the informal use of PrEP. The importance of a health promotion campaign to inform people about PrEP, what is PrEP, how to use it, and what it stands for. To have a cohort study of MSM at risk to get a more representative sample because this is a small study, around 200 participants. Train healthcare professionals, many doctors, healthcare workers, they don't know what is PrEP. They still don't know what is PrEP. And design policy to make PrEP more affordable, but we have discussed about it. So a few words about the monkeypox, because we were talking about challenge of the sexual health clinic. So, yes. I didn't talk about post-exposure. Yes, about it. Yes, it's a big problem. I should, you're right. Yes.
Post-exposure.
PEP is a big problem because there is a lot of confusion how to get PEP still. It's not free in Malta, and people... It's 600 euro, yes, around 600 euro. Yes, and there is a lot of confusion because people going to the emergency, they get a 2 days prescription, they don't know where to go to buy because the pharmacy doesn't dispense the post-exposure prophylaxis. We had a case last day, was given the pediatric dose, it was so completely not fine, let's say. And then patients need to go to the pharmacies to buy the post-exposure prophylaxis, and they need to come to our clinic to be guided on how to take it. But many people cannot afford, obviously, to pay 600 euros, so they decide to don't go for it.
But, excuse me, but the thing is that we as politicians have to target these situations, because when you have post-exposure situations, it is the right niche where we should target the patient, because we can prevent an infection spread and the socio-economic effects on our health system.
I mean, you have to be very careful that our emergency department is not the right place for people to come for post-exposure prophylaxis, because we will end up with a deluge of patients who will come for free post-exposure prophylaxis. And the cost of this is quite significant, and we need to take that into consideration as well, because there will be a fair number of people who will take post-exposure prophylaxis, which will impact the affordability of what we can provide. So I have to keep this into consideration. The cost is incredibly high, as we have said, and it is not easy.
That's why if we work better on PrEP, we don't need PEP, you know? If we work more on prevention, on pre-exposure, but some elements is...
We will have a significant element of PEP which are not... We already see this to some extent. We have a significant element of PEP which is not MSM. Which is not MSM,
yes.
And what is sexual assault is currently provided for free.
Yes.
But remember that we have to rely on what the patient tells us, and credibility as to whether we are giving out this medication, which is very expensive, for free or not. So there is a lot of confusion in unclear areas, which are unfair to some extent for the ones who are assaulted. But there is a certain amount of people who will come and take advantage of the situation occasionally. So you will have it will not all be assault. It will not all be assault.
I fully understand what you're saying. However, I mean, this is at par with what we see with the morning after pill and preventing unwanted pregnancies. This is far more serious, because we're preventing a sexually transmitted disease with huge implications on the patient, the family, the social effect, and the health system. As we're seeing, we're having a surge in our infection rate in Malta. So I'm not talking simply about having free medication, but at least we have to create a platform where post-exposure treatment is available. Some people can manage the price, can afford it. So we have to create a platform where we direct our patients, our citizens, residents, or whoever, to have this available.
Not the patients.
Pardon?
Not the patients.
Of course.
Okay. So going to another. Keep on going. Going to another challenge that we have faced this year, 2022. I mean, we had the monkeypox outbreak in Malta. And as you can see, the blue is the GU clinic, so the patient will attend our clinic. So we saw most of the patients with monkeypox. In total, in Malta, there were 34 cases, 32 male and 2 females. And this is the distribution by sexual orientation. So they were mainly MSM, so that's why we have seen them the most, because they were coming to our clinic where they are, I mean, they know us and they are familiar with us. And other patients went to emergency or to primary health service or dermatology. Few were heterosexual or defined themselves as heterosexual or bisexual, and one is unknown. Distribution by nationality, we have seen a lot also here, non-Maltese patients with monkeypox, only 10 were Maltese. And the case origin, mainly it was sourced locally, according to what patients were saying, or some cases were also imported. So the presenting complaint on diagnosis, mainly skin lesions, but also lymphadenopathy, classic presentation, fever, genital ulcer, so genital lesion, anal discharge, some patients also without any skin lesion and any skin rash, just pain, a lot of pain. Some clinical presentation, common of monkeypox, and the challenges of the transmission. We had some cases of non-sexual transmission, so contact, flatmates, no sexual contact. There is a completely new geographic distribution. The differential diagnosis was quite challenging in high-risk patients with other presentations similar to monkeypox, mainly genital herpes or syphilis, so in the differential diagnosis. Difficult to perform contact tracing. We have to deal with stigma related to these new STIs, new outbreak. Resource and logistics in sexual health clinics. Obviously, we have to give priority to these patients and reduce others. So foreigner, a lot of South Americans, so linguistic barrier, tourists, people moving and coming to our country, and then other issue related to vaccine, which is now is available, but post-exposure, and now that the outbreak basically finished, and we see what happened, and challenges related to isolation. So in conclusion, and which are my future perspectives, so in 2022 we have seen the emerging and re-emerging of STIs and the outbreaks of STIs. During the COVID pandemic, Malta experienced a low coverage for preventive testing and treatment services related to STIs. And we have seen, as a consequence, the increase of at least the three STIs, bacterial STIs, syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. We have faced some outbreak, monkeypox, but also shigella. We didn't talk about shigella somnae and the antimicrobial resistance also related to shigella outbreak and lymphogranuloma venereum. We are facing issue with antimicrobial resistance in Europe of Neisseria gonorrhea and also in Malta, Mycoplasma genitalium, which are of concern, and they because we have limited treatment option. I envisage a new model of STI services, reaching out to the community, community testing, mobile clinic, and decentralized services, and we are working on it. And together, we joined the call of WHO on countries to increase funding for STI service and focus effort to scale up STI prevention testing. We have discussed about PrEP, but also PEP, and treatment for HIV, also universal treatment for HIV, access to care, and urge against stigmatization, blaming, and shaming, so reduce also stigma. Okay. And with this I finish. I'm organizing a congress, a European congress, in Malta on STIs next year, at the end of year. So this will bring to Malta a lot of international, a lot of attention also for international public, and a lot of education, possibility of educate trained doctors, GPs, and also the community will be able to attend this, the community, the NGO, the LGBT community will be able to attend this Congress. The theme of the topic is reaching out there to reach, because I really believe in outreach. Okay, so move out from hospital, from centers, and go to the community. This is what I see. Okay, thank you.
To ask.
Thank you.
I would like to ask two questions. I've heard, you said that basically contraception use, like it has fallen out of fashion?
Condom usage, mainly.
Particular condom usage.
Because that's the important
so,
thing. Exactly.
Barrier methods of contraception. So basically, how do you think we can counteract that? Because I don't really think that it's an educational problem, because everyone knows how that condom use is very important. And second thing, as regards HPV, although it's not a sexually transmitted disease, or it's not really one of the sexually transmitted diseases that basically is referred to the GU clinic, so to say, not like in this case.
A lot of HPV. It's
HPV,
our first
yes, but
STI.
The problem is that what I would like to ask, but really and truly not a lot of people with HPV come over, they're really concerned.
Yes, it's our first STI. I didn't put it in the statistic because we don't notify, but the first number of patients, I mean, the highest statistic is for HPV. Genital warts.
For genital warts,
yes.
But in the case of HPV, where patients are HPV positive, have you got some data regarding HPV and the other sexually transmitted diseases that it carries along with it?
In combination.
That's why I wanted to ask. Not in case of exactly.
Why this question? So combination HPV is in general in all LGU setting the most common STI.
Yes.
Now we are expecting
because
Europa
the thing
because
is what I'm, I meant was that because people with HPV probably you've got a much skewed results from the amount of people that you're seeing that they because probably most of the people with HPV do not come to the GU clinic.
No, they come. If you have genital warts,
don't you think
don't,
that they no?
You don't come to the GU clinic to freeze them. It's the most common STI we see every day. Yes, it's very common. We see and we screen them. We offer testing. It's like the other STIs. It's much more common than chlamydia. HPV is the number one. Let's say, no, I didn't bring the result of the epidemiology, but it's really the higher prevalence for STIs in our clinic is HPV. So many patients with genital warts, they are referred for cryotherapy to be treated for the warts. And they relapse and they come back, so we see them quite
in
a lot
cases
of
patients. In cases of smear tests, which are at coilus.
You're confusing maybe HPV genital warts and smear test. So smear
because
test
the thing is you see as the genital warts.
Mm-hmm.
In case of coilocytic changes,
we refer
there
to
is presence of HPVs.
Yes.
They're not referred to GU clinic, no? Or not?
We also do a smear test in case a person doesn't do a smear test for the last, 5 years, we do a smear test. And if we find something positive, we refer to gynecology, obviously. Or we inform and advise to go to do a smear test to the health center where there are gynecologists. We always discuss HPV. We discuss HPV vaccine because with a vaccine we can have a drop in the rate of oncogenic.
Because what I was concerned lately that a lot of people with coilocytic changes who are basically seen at pap smear tests and they have coilocytic changes, especially privately, they're not being referred to the GU clinic.
No, probably that's not. Gynecologist, you're talking about girls.
It was exactly about this, because I know that obviously with wars and office and stuff,
they come over to the GU clinic,
but there is a chunk which is not.
They should be tested because they are sexually active, and as they got HPV, they should come
and
for screening
why,
of STIs.
Exactly, that's why maybe we can, through that, go on to the other sexually transmitted diseases that might be underreported.
So it might be educational. It might be educational for us about our gynecologists, because they are getting the colonoscopic changes. They will get them.
Because a lot of people, exactly,
pathologists,
they're really concerned about HPV because it can lead to cancer, but they're not really concerned
about
the other conditions.
About an STI, they refer chlamydia, they refer other STIs.
That's why I was.
I understand now what you mean. So they don't come to us; they go to them, and yes, but. Again, HPV is very common, and we have a waiting list, time. So this is something maybe the GPs can take.
It's a very, it's a very valid discussion.
Me as a GP, me as a practicing GP, I find that as one of the,
I know that obviously it is a sexually transmitted disease
and it's the most prevalent, probably the most prevalent, and we're finding it even more common. Mm-hmm. I think Stephen can confirm this.
Like that we have a vaccination now even in the male population. It will help us. Anyway, I think, Chair, we should adopt a situation in this committee where with the expertise we had today, we should adopt a sort of preventive method of trying to reduce the spread of STIs in our country by using tools available in education, in health promotion, vaccinations in terms of HPV and barrier methods. And I think at a political level, because we have to speak out not as doctors here, but in terms of our political status, and try to adopt as a health committee a recommendation to the government to so that we try to prevent the spread in terms of STIs in more.
I didn't say we give free condom to people, so you know we provide free condom at the
clinic,
but and we encourage people
to take them. I think the schools play a very important role.
I'm seeing the statistics here, patients distribution by age. In the 17 years to the 40, 50 years old, it's the most people that are effective. And I've seen a very good platform, which is the sexualhealth.gov.mt here, whether it's promoted enough with this kind of generation, which are really, really online users. So we can sort of and promote this idea with this information platform, which is very easily accessible and very, very user-friendly, so to say. What I do not see is the Maltese version of this platform, and that is a suggestion that I may allow me to make. On the other hand, there is also a good site, which is hivmalta.com. Which can also be embarked in the same initiative as well. And the idea of pushing further on the PSD subjects in primary and secondary schools and sort of update the contents of the current information that is being given towards the students, both at secondary and primary level, and as well university as well, because
start from the teacher, so we should update the teacher, inform the teacher, and do a TOT, a training of trainers. So the sexual health nurse should train and talk with the teachers,
when
and then
start.
From there we have to start, not from the
ASAP.
That is sexual health.
From my experience, that's going to be a problem.
Health promotion. But that is true, because the teacher, I speak with young, you know, they come, my teacher told me this, and I, my hair became straight, that usually I'm curly.
This can be seen from the technological side.
It's very important. I mean, the teacher, there are a lot of we didn't talk about contraception, not barrier contraception, also the use of the contraceptive pill. There was no, I mean, girls are not using the pill because there are a lot of myths about the use of the pill. So we have to start from there. And many things at school, they learn these things. So we have to start from.
It's hard to convince the parents.
Practically what I'm looking for now, because now we've got the survey going on, and this is grasping data. Data on sexual health locally, and this definitely is going to help us because it's going to give us an indication of this data once validated, because the data that is in hand dates back to 2010. So practically now we're going back 12 years, and sexual education, sexual awareness has changed along these 12 years. What worried me during all of this discussion mainly was that when we spoke about barrier methods, condoms literally, your reaction was that patients, even though they are aware of the importance of making use of condoms, they're moving backwards from it. So what I'm aiming for is it the cost of the condom? Because I don't think that they revert back because of the cost of the condom. There are certain issues that they might be not making it sound so important that they need to use it. So we speak about
This is not a local issue. This is a cultural issue which is spreading across the whole world.
It's not about education.
Yes, it is not about education. It is in fact a cultural trend which is going in reverse to some extent. Although we know that condoms and barrier methods are an effective way of reducing infection and disease. Yet, both in the MSM group and in other groups, there is a resistance to use of condom because of culture, because of social status, because of stigma, because in actual fact we are going the wrong way with the use of contraception. But this is not just Malta, this is the whole world.
What are the reasons when we're looking at other countries?
We have to focus more on the respect of the person. No, of the integrity of the person, of your body. You have to put the discussion, change discussion, don't talk about condom. That is perceived as something old, out of fashion. They don't want to listen to you if you talk about condom. So we don't talk about condom. I try, obviously, every day to talk about condom, but when you see this kind of, like, you know, why you bother me with this discussion of my nana, no, you understand what I mean. So talk about something else, the respect of the body, for instance.
Which in turn is going to revert back on the importance of making use of condoms.
Then is something else, yes.
So why you have to come here? So
some people, no, they come every week with STIs. At a certain point, maybe, no, they realize that they should try to respect themselves a bit more and take care of themselves. There is a sort...
But the health promotion way, we need to promote it on a national level and push it forward. Not just of the importance of making use of it, but why? Why? We have to make them much more aware of the end result when they're going to turn out into patients rather than being citizens, than being like teenagers, than being young adults, and how they're going to end up with the condition of sexually transmitted disease. So I think the health promotion needs to push this forward, because when they will know the end result, hopefully, they will understand on the importance of making use of condoms.
The challenge is international. This is not something that we are seeing locally only. The challenge is internationally, that there is a trend internationally that the use of condoms is being used less rather than more. And what Valeska has said, that they will think that this is what my grandparents used to say. Younger people are not interested in hearing that message anymore. So this is why maybe PrEP. But PrEP will only prevent one disease. It will not prevent all these diseases, which is what we need to be pushing, that this is not just... PrEP will only prevent HIV. There are many other diseases which need preventing as well. It's not easy, because they will get mixed messages coming across the internet from other countries, from other cultures, which is not easy.
I will try to bring it up, because I'm a member of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, and I will try also on the Social Affairs Committee, which we also deal with health issues. And I will also try to discuss at that level what are the views from other countries, and maybe, yes, we can revert back following our next meetings that we're going to have. I think it's going to be a good issue that we need to see.
Probably people will start using condom if there is another STIs that it will be not curable, you know, or when there is the multi-drug resistant gonorrhea that spread and they will have gonorrhea and they will not... when people were using condom when the HIV came out, the epidemic, so there was an increase of use condom and a drop of STIs.
The fact that there is treatment for HIV in some respects reduces the use of condom. because there is treatment now. So that is, so the message has to be different, and the message has to be in a way where it has to be moderated. So the fact that HIV is treatable is good, but remember that you can get other diseases which are also treatable, but not all are treatable.
In fact, to be honest, as I was speaking before, I think one of the most important things is I think we should focus more on, as well on HPV, because I think that it's one of the most rampant, actually sexually transmitted diseases, which probably we don't really have a good clue how rampant it is in society. And the thing is, I think if we, because most people will be shocked that they have HPV, and they will tell you, how come do I have HPV? Well, and I don't really think that they, most of these people fall within the population that probably attends. I know that you see with general wars and stuff, but population that attends.
Now, see, look at the data of Australia, where there is a massive vaccination campaign of boys and girls with HPV nanovalent vaccine. HPV drop both the oncogenic type and HPV causing genital warts. So if we use the vaccine and we use it properly in male and female population, we will not see HPV
in fact,
anymore.
It's going to be
we are hoping to start very soon the HPV vaccination in boys. We'll start at age 12 this year. This coming year we will start at age 12, and we have a plan that we will do a catch-up program to get all the ones who are up to the age of 20, so that all our young people who will be sexually active in the next 20 years will all be vaccinated, and there will be. So this is starting this year, so the coming year, we will hope that we will start the HPV for boys.
Is it also possible to have the data that you have at the moment collected on HPV? Because here, today we didn't have a problem. Just an indication to pass it on, no problem.
Yes.
So that we can have a view
of
what we have. And also,
HPV.
We can realize along the years the importance of the vaccination. So then we can compare. We're going to, already the HPV is being given to the girls. From 2000 onwards, now 12 onwards. So practically, now I would like also to see whether there is a drop or not, and we start analyzing the data that there is.
Dr. Busatil, I will leave the concluding remarks to you.
Okay. I would like to congratulate Valeska for her efforts and thank her for her presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Busatil.
There are certain areas where there has been a lot of development. So Valeska came here in 2015. And she was the alone doctor with one general practitioner. Now we have three specialists. We are hoping to employ another and to get someone else involved soon. We have trained six GPs who are not specialists but who have a special interest in this, and we are hoping that within the next year we will have a duplication of the GEO clinic, which we have at Mater Dei. We'll have a duplication within the Paula Hub when this will open. So we will have two centers where there will be. We also have plans that these general practitioners who have trained will be working in three other centers as well. So we will have five centers within the next year or two. We are currently funding point-of-care testing in the plan of funding point-of-care testing at all these different centers.
We forgot to say that we open God's GU clinic
as well. So yes. these will all hopefully get to the patient. I would think that it is very important that from all that we have said, the most important one is education. And we need to make sure that our doctors who are specialists in this, our GPs who have specialized in this, will transmit their knowledge to doctors, to patients, to nurses, to students, to teachers, to the whole lot. I think our biggest role as doctors is to teach more than to treat, because whatever we teach is much more valuable than what we treat. It is much easier to prevent than to treat.
Other things, I think that there is a lot of interest about training on sexual health, so maybe we should every year have a conference. Focus on sexuality.
Exactly.
With different topic, once we
but
did
not just
we did
doctors,
a radio,
not just doctors,
no,
but also
even pharmacists,
yes.
Because
pharmacists,
they are also the first
teachers,
line that
yes.
Going to be
and
close
and
to the
pharmacists, teachers, students, children.
Agreed.
We need
yes.
To work on
we
this.
We should work on
this.
Thank you for that. Thanks. Thank you, Dr. Valeska. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.